Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Ryan, how are you doing today? Ryan's kind of, did you get stung by a bee? You're kind of swollen up down there, Ryan. But Ryan had, we've got some other things going on in the company, and he was pulled away. And this is the first episode we've had that I've been by myself. But I'm not by myself. Yep. I may be hosting by myself. I've got Don Lamb, who is the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. So welcome, Don. Yep.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate being here.
Well, first of all, and even though it's just me hosting, we can't pass up the question of the day. And today's question of the day is, tell us about your favorite comedy movie and why. So what is your favorite comedy movie and why is that?
Favorite comedy movie I have, and I've got a couple reasons for it. This is a good one. But I like The Princess Bride, which is an old one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
An old classic. And part of the reason I like it, it's interesting. When that came out, I was at Purdue, and we watched it as a bunch of fraternity brothers. I was an AGR fraternity, and I could start dropping names right now of the people that I watched that movie with, and to the point where we knew a lot of the lines.
Oh,
and we
yeah.
would repeat a lot of the things, and when we call each other on the phone today, we will say some of those lines to remind ourselves of it. But the other part of that movie that was interesting, I've got four daughters, and they're all in their 20s now, but we watched that movie a lot with our kids. It's kind yep. of fun to have a movie that you can watch as a fraternity brothers, and then you can also watch it with your daughters. That's a little bit unusual.
That is right.
And, but my kids really liked that movie too, as they were growing up. So for two different reasons, that movie, I don't know how many times I've seen it, but it's just been part of my life, really.
Well, it makes memes out of it now, right?
Oh yeah,
that word you're using.
Oh yeah. And it's a silly movie. There's
it is.
There's nothing. There's no redeeming quality to it. It's just silly fun. So,
well, yeah. That is funny. The I was trying to think of what mine would be, and you took a really good one. I wish I'd have taken that one now. But there's a lot of funny ones. Is Young Frankenstein but probably an obscure one my wife and I watched. We were traveling down to Mexico. We was on a plane, and we watched Wild Hogs. And for some reason, that movie made us laugh. And yep. and we were watching it on our iPad. And we had our earplugs in, mm-hmm. and people around us had to think we were crazy because we were just busting out laughing at yep. times. Yep. And then there's another one that's probably totally opposite of Princess Bride would be Blazing Saddles.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. and that's not one you can watch with anyone. But it was that was just a time whenever we all made fun of everyone.
Right.
And it was just, you can make fun of yourselves.
Yep.
And you just can't do that anymore.
Right.
And
yep. we're getting old.
Oh, my. Yeah, that was a whole different time. We had yep. shows that actually made fun of each other and ourselves, and,
right.
and it was okay.
Yep.
But things have changed.
Yep.
So, Don, just kind of introduce yourself a little bit and tell us kind of
yep.
about what
yep.
you and your career path and how yep. you got to be yep. where you are today.
Yep. Well, it's been an interesting story. I'm a farmer from Boone County, and I farm with my dad and my brother and now my nephews, and I've got one daughter that works part-time on the farm.
Oh, wow.
And so, but my dad's a first-generation farmer, grew up in Indianapolis, and he's got kind of a neat story of how he started, and I'm really proud of my dad and really being able to start a farm from scratch. And then my brother and I, were the beneficiaries of that. And now we've got the next generation involved. And really, that's really as far as how I got here. Bruce Kettler had been in this position
yep.
before me, and he did a great job. And Bruce and I are good friends. We still meet once a month and talk all the time. And the ACI connection is really, really good for the Department of Ag. But he had decided it was time to leave that position, so it was a position they needed to fill. And I really just got a phone call one day asking if I would consider it. And things moved very fast. And one of those things where I didn't think I could do something like this. I'm a farmer. How do you
yeah.
get? And a lot of people said, I'm glad there's a farmer in this position. And I think that's true. I think it's good. Whether it's me or somebody else, I think it's good to have a farmer in this position. But that's pretty a tall order.
Sure it is.
Because how do you leave your farm?
Yeah.
And so, because this is very much a full-time job. And so when I talked to my brother and said, what if I did this? He said, well, that will force us to do some things we need to do anyway. And when you think about, we as farmers aren't necessarily the best at passing down responsibilities to the next generation. And so that's really what has happened, is I've been able to walk away for a bit. I hope to go back, and I hope there's still a spot for me. They're getting along a little better than I would have liked to think they would without me. But anyway, as I've been able to walk away, the next generation's picked up more of that responsibility. And so been in this position now since March 13th of last year. So over a year now.
Wow.
And really, you know, if I'm not going to be a farmer, I can't think of a better job I could have than to just be an advocate for agriculture.
I tell you, thank you, because for what you're doing, because it's hard to walk away from something you love and you love and you grew up with and you've been around, and it just, someone's got to do it. And there's not many representatives in the state house that are farmers. I think there's only three.
Right.
Is that right?
Full-time farmer, really, you know, Kendall Culp would really be the one. And then we've got some others that have some interest in ag, and maybe they own a farm and things like that. So it's not that it's completely foreign there, but it's pretty tough to find people that have real knowledge of agriculture.
Yeah, and then we've got to have people, because it's such a small group of people that actually farm anymore, and just someone there to represent and to advocate for it. So tell us about the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. So tell us it's kind of your recent travels, what all have you been doing,
Boy, I could. When you say tell me about the state
Look at my
ag,
schedule.
I could talk so much about the different things going on. And one thing I'll say just to follow up, it's partly to do with this, partly to do with your last question. But probably one of the things that I've learned the most out of being in this position is, A, I've learned to really, really appreciate farmers. When you're a farmer, you don't necessarily think that way. Or farmers are humble people, so. You know, we don't pat ourselves on the back too much. We don't talk real loudly about what we do. So you just keep your nose down and keep working. Now that I've stepped out of that position and I'm looking back at my brother and I'm looking at all the farmers around and I think about the things they're doing daily, I really have come to appreciate farmers. And if you're a farmer out there and you're listening to this and you know, you may not hear that very often, but I'm just telling you it's the truth. When you step back and look at it, farmers are very special people with a lot of responsibility, and they do a lot of great things, not only on their farm, but in their communities and in every way. So farmers are very special. And then people like Premier Co-op and all the different organizations that support farmers, I'm seeing that from a different, you know, just the fact that you're doing this.
Totally,
you know,
different perspective.
You know, you guys doing a podcast to help with agriculture doesn't, you know, probably hard to see why that's going to put money in the bottom line of Premier Co-op. But it's promoting agriculture, and it's telling that story, and it's doing things farmers maybe don't do so well on our own. So anyway, I've learned to appreciate the farm from a different perspective. And then as far as ISDA goes, I could talk about a lot of different things. You know, the FFA is a part of ISDA.
There's five.
Yeah, economic development would be another one. Our legislative team, as far as keeping track of things going on in a legislature. Soil conservation is a part of what we do. It's a big part of what we do. About half of our staff in Indiana is soil conservation staff. And then the grain buyers, the grain indemnity fund, is the only regulatory function we have.
That's a big one.
It's a big one. We're very different than other states in that many other states have a lot of regulatory function. In many other states, the state chemist office would be a part of the Department of Ag, maybe the Board of Animal Health, parts of IDEM, parts of Department of Natural Resources. Most other states are much larger than we are in both budget and people. Part of me is jealous of the budget that other states might have and the way that they could promote agriculture. But most of me is thankful because we don't have that regulatory function on a big scale. And, you know, our job is to advocate for agriculture. Our job is to build relationships and promote agriculture every way we can. And that's a great spot to be.
Yeah.
I like that job. But then we have to be really good at partnering when we think about the Board of Animal Health and the State Chemist Office. We have constant conversations with them, and we want to be an advocate again for agriculture and work in partnership with those folks. But it's not quite like a lot of other states where it's part of what you do.
Yeah, that's and in some ways it's better working with someone. I mean, that's, you get to hear the more candid discussions and from a farmer perspective and just bringing things and telling them, you know, how difficult that will be to accommodate, whatever that is, right? Well intentions, right?
Yeah.
You have really good intentions, but something's just not practical to implement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just having the practicality of a farmer attitude in the room.
Yeah, and we've got such good people in those positions. You know, I always tell people Brett Marsh is probably the best state veterinarian in the country, and I think a lot of people in other states would say the same thing. Just very well respected, and our state chemist office at Purdue is very highly respected. So, you know, it's easy to have these good relationships with people that are easy to work with and good to work with for agriculture. And we're really, really fortunate in Indiana to have that.
Just a lot of commonality.
Exactly.
Everybody's got the same goal.
Exactly.
I mean, we want healthy animals.
Exactly.
We want good crops. We want successful farmers. So there's just a lot of commonality.
Yep.
So tell us, I think probably one of the, before we move off of this, talk to us a little about the Indiana grain buyers.
Yeah.
And what all that involves.
Yeah, well, the easy way I always started out and say is it's kind of like the FDIC for the grain system.
That's a good way to put
it. You know, if you're going to put money in the bank, you want to have some assurance that if something bad happens to that bank, you're going to get your money back. And that's really what the Grain Indemnity Fund was set up to do. There's about a $35 million fund that was farmer funded, you know, at a time they took part of every corn check that came in until it got to a certain level. And now they haven't collected for quite a while because it got to a certain level. And then that fund, that division in our agency is responsible to really keep track of those grain buyers, and that, and in terms of they do reporting and just in how they're doing both financially and what they've got, you know, in stock is what they say, what shows up on paper is really what they've got. So we actually do check inventories and heaven forbid there would be a failure, there's a way to get some money back in that case. But hopefully all this helps to where there's not failures is really the goal.
It's to prevent. I mean, it's preventative. It's not a in that case, the FDIC, we think about like that's keeping our money safe.
Yeah.
This does the same thing, but this is more of a preventative measure.
Right.
So
exactly.
Being able to keep eyes on everything.
Yep.
So
so
what does a normal day look like?
Oh,
there's
no normal day. And it's partly why I think it is also good that a farmer's in this spot, because that's been my life anyway. It's, you know, farmers always say, well, you know, every day is different. You know, you're always doing something different. And that's very much the way it is with this job. The biggest change for me has been that every day is different, and I really don't decide too much of that schedule.
Well, that's right.
You know, the schedule is kind of laid out, and today is a fun day for me because I love to see agriculture. I love to see different parts of the state. So to be able to come down here, and I've got a meeting in Oldenburg after this for lunch to meet with a state senator.
Well, we appreciate you making the trip,
and that'll be good. And then I'll be at Shelbyville for another meeting this afternoon. And so normally my days kind of make some sense on how to travel, where you're going, what you're doing, or whether you're staying in the office. I'm probably 40% of the time in the office, 40 to 50, and then the rest of the time I'm traveling. And I have done 5 foreign trips since I've been in the office.
Wow.
As far as that goes, trade trips. So that's been an eye opener as well.
I bet it has.
Yeah.
As far as the foreign trade, I mean, has that been pretty effective? And I mean, we have countries that want good quality grain, and we have it here.
Right.
It's just a matter of getting everyone connected, right?
Yeah. Oh, it is. And you know, my whole life I've heard we feed the world. You know, farmers feed the world, and I think a lot of times we become numb to that as farmers. You know, we get up every day and we raise a crop, but we don't think about how important that is to the world. I guess the one that sticks out to me the most fairly recently, I went to South Korea, and South Korea is 51 million people in the geographic size of Indiana.
Oh my!
So you think about, you know, basically 51 Indianapolises of people in the same inside the size of Indiana, and about 70% of their topography is mountains. So you know, they have no way to raise the amount of food they need to feed their people. So you know, they rely on imports and they rely on us, and so we're part of that team that brings them high quality food. And so it's a reality. When we say we feed the world, it's not just something we say. The world needs people like us. And then I went to Brazil last week, and a lot of times we look at Brazil as a competitor,
yep.
You know, and they're the ones that we kind of battle with. And honestly, I think we need to stop looking at them as only a competitor. Yes, we're doing the same things, but between them and us, we're feeding the world.
That's true.
And so we need to look for those areas of collaboration where we can do things better and work together in some ways. You know, they're going to keep getting better. That's the thing. They're big and they're growing a lot, and they're going to keep getting better, you know. And so, you know, at some point we accept that and say, we do things like we do really good identity preserved grains. We produce products out of our grains. We do a lot of things that they can't do,
mm-hmm.
but they raise a lot of crops in a big way. And, you know, number two corn, number two soybeans, but their infrastructure is still struggling. But when, you know, you step back and look at it from the perspective I've been able to see, it makes me appreciate agriculture, not just in Indiana, not just in our country, really in the world. How does this all work? And boy, agriculture is so important. And I just can't stress that enough. I've come to appreciate it so much more from this perspective.
We had an episode, of course, you know, Beth Bechtel.
Oh yeah.
And she is now, she's over a good portion of the, I'll get the title wrong, so I won't make a stab at it.
FAO.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we had her on for a podcast and from Rome. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a chance to go over there, but we had to do it remotely.
Yeah.
And just the challenges that they see of just trying to get food and teach people how to farm all over the world.
Yep.
And what a farmer looks like in most parts of the world is like one animal.
Yep.
And maybe scratching a little bit in the dirt, and that's about it.
Yep.
Total difference in what we have here.
Big difference.
Well, speaking of farming, we've got a farm bill. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit, I guess maybe explain what the farm bill is in broad terms, mm-hmm. and then to the listeners that may not be familiar, why it is so important and kind of what the status is now.
Right. Well, Farm Bill, it is interesting. It's called the Farm Bill, and about 80% of it is really more nutrition programs and things like that. And we as farmers get a little defensive about that sometimes. And, you know, the bottom line is you're really trying to work a political system where you've got urban legislators that are concerned about those the nutrition parts of that bill, and then you've got agricultural folks, and we don't have the numbers in a lot of ways. You know, when we think about how big ag is, we're such a small part of the voting block that in many ways we really need that urban part of the legislature to understand the farm bill, and so extremely important things to do with farming, and also nutrition part of it is a big part of that. One thing that we as farmers sometimes don't realize too, when we talk about the nutrition part, we tend to think of that negatively, like, well, that's welfare, it's food stamps. It is partly that, but it's still our products. You know, our products are still being put through a system, mm-hmm. where they're getting food to people. So we can't, it's a little bit, I'll kind of equate it a little bit to DDGs when we think about taking corn out of the food system. And now we've got these DDGs. Well, the DDGs are still feeding livestock.
Yes.
They're still part of the system. And so in some ways, I think we have to be careful to recognize that part of it. The nutrition part of the farm bill is still a benefit to farmers in the way that food gets to people through school programs and things like that. So that's one thing.
Well, the negative parts, the abuse, the fraud, that always gets the press.
Right.
But if you can go to a local school system and see that, those two meals a day, breakfast is offered, and then also lunches. I mean, those are, in some cases, the only two predictable meals other than maybe a Pop-Tarts or something else that a child's going to get. And there is a lot of kids like that.
Yeah, that's very true. And I just think when we think about the Farm Bill, it's a frustrating thing to us in a lot of ways. I say the statement, the truth is the truth, quite a bit. And the bottom line is there's truth to every side of situations and arguments and bills, and we really just need to understand it well and then get behind it in the best way possible that's good for agriculture. And so along with that, you know, I think a lot about a farm bill from a farmer's side. I always I want it to be a productive farm bill. I don't, you know, we don't also take well to thinking we're getting some sort of a government handout ourselves as farmers. We say, hey, just create for us an environment that helps us sell our product. We'll produce the product. Let us farm. Get out of the way and let us farm. And I'm very much about that. And the thing I guess I've seen is I used to think about as a farmer, I thought about crop insurance quite a bit. And I do. The crop insurance program is important, and I definitely want to support that. From my standpoint, it gets back to our trade our trade conversation is I want to see some money, you know, make sure we're supporting our ability to sell our products overseas. And give us the tools. The USDA does a great job. When we go on these trips, I've got two staff members in India right now this week. And when they're there, in this case, they're with the USDA, and it is not costing Indiana a lot of money. You know,
that's awesome.
Really, the USDA supports things like that. And they've got the connections. They've got the embassy connections. They've got the industry connections. And they're very efficient, very good trips. And there's 11 states represented on this trip to India, for example. And they'll do a good job of helping each one of those states make the connections they need to make. And so it's impressive and it's important. And when I think about the Farm Bill now, I think, you know, yes, kind of get out of our way with regulation as much as possible and then help us sell our product.
Yeah.
And help us create that market.
Create new markets.
Yeah.
Let us connect us to people that need what we have.
Yeah. And when, you know, Ted McKinney is from Indiana.
Yeah.
Ted, you know, was in my position before Bruce. And then Ted was in the was head of the trade. He was the undersecretary of trade under Donald Trump. And and now he's the CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. So he's the CEO of my group, of my position.
In
the association. So we've got this awesome Indiana connection with Ted, and who understands that world really well. And it's very gratifying to see those personal connections and how they really mean a big. It's making a big difference in
sure
the world.
Sure it does.
In the world, you know.
Yeah, because if there's no continuity between organizations, whether it's or agencies, if there's no continuity, you can't keep starting from zero.
Right.
Every time you go to India, you can't start from square one with introductions. You've got to have something in place that overlaps between changes that we may have or they may have.
Yeah.
And just to keep the ball moving forward.
Yep. That's right.
The I guess one of the things right now is the Farm Bill is going to be coming around for January, or hopefully before that they'll get something. What's the odds of that happening? So,
well,
for those that don't know, we're operating on an extension,
right,
a year.
Yeah, and what's really going to happen is anybody's guess. In the last 2 weeks, there's been some more optimism about, hey, we're going to get this done. And it is kind of the epitome of political, it's just terrible how things get held up politically for reasons that really don't have anything to do with practically why we need to get this done. So, but in the last really couple weeks, there's been some optimism about pushing it through and get it done. And I think most people had kind of given up on that until maybe next year. And then there was the turnaround pushback from more of the urban states. And it gets back to what we're talking about. It always ends up being the nutrition part of it. And the Republicans mostly saying we want to limit that or hold it back. And then you've got the more the urban constituents normally, and the more the Democratic side saying, oh, you know, we can't do that. So had some positive movement, then had some pushback, and I think we're in that negotiating phase. I'm excited, optimistic that at least these conversations are happening. You know, where, you know, 3 weeks ago, I think it felt like it was just quiet.
And it kind of seems, from us outside looking in, like professional wrestling, you know, in the Capitol Hill now.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how words became so toxic.
Right.
I mean, they just...
Right.
You hear the term trigger words or something, but I mean, our congresswoman was in the area, and she was speaking to a group of farmers, and in some of our territories, they have a lot of produce. They grow lot of produce, and we need migrant labor. Yeah. And that is a different kind of work.
Yeah.
If you aren't familiar with that, but they're picking up all day. Mm-hmm. You know, and it'd be no different than you and I going and running a marathon.
Right.
I mean, we could not do that. We'd have to train and get used to it. Well, that type of labor, and they get paid well to do this, but it's a very repetitive over and over. But she brought up the point that they can't hardly talk about migrant labor without talking about border security.
Right.
And those are two different things.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of those issues fall into that camp where we've become so teams. We've separated into these teams that we can't hardly talk about the common things anymore.
Yeah, no, and I think it gets back to that, you know, like I say, the truth is the truth. You know, what is the truth of the situation? It just, and that we always have to go back to that, because there's two sides to everything, but there is a truth in the middle, and we got to keep talking about the truth. And since you brought it up, I will also give some kudos to the guys that do the produce. You know, I'm a corn and soybean farmer from northern half of Indiana.
Big tractors, and so, big equipment.
Yeah, and so that's been my world. And I've learned so much about the folks that do produce down more in this part of the world and southern half of Indiana. And the other thing that I realize, I mean, it is such a complicated, complex business.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have a lot of respect. I've just learned to respect all the challenges that different farmers have to deal with. And it doesn't translate well. As a grain farmer, I could not come down and start raising watermelons. I don't know near enough to
labor intensive.
Yes, everything about it is so different. So anyway, I've gained a lot of respect for the different kinds of diversity of agriculture we've got across the state.
That's a great lead in. Don, tell us kind of some things about Indiana agriculture. And we like to be first in a lot of things, but tell us about, I never thought of like hardwoods as a crop, right?
Right.
But can you share with us a few statistics or just some kind of like different things about Indiana agriculture that we might not be aware of?
Yeah. Well, in the big picture, we're the ninth largest farming state in the country, which is impressive because we're the 38th largest state. And when you think about agriculture mostly being something to do with land, the fact that we're not a very big state and we're still in the top 10 in farming, as far as that goes, we're the seventh biggest exporter. So I think that speaks, too, to the fact that, like I said earlier, we produce quality products, and we produce things that we can be proud to ship anywhere around the world. So we're big at that. I'm a popcorn grower, so I always start with that one. I like to brag about popcorn. We're number one in popcorn. We always kind of go back and forth with Nebraska, so we have a kind of a fun competition with Nebraska and popcorn, but we're number one in that. We're number one in duck. And that's something a lot of us.
Maple Leaf,
Culver. We've got some great companies, mostly in northern Indiana, that do a lot of duck. And when you travel and when you go to these overseas, you realize that's a lot bigger deal than what we might think of. In this part of the world, we don't eat a lot of duck. It's not something we see real commonly, but it is very common in most parts in many other parts of the world. So that's something to be proud of. We're number one when it comes to gourds and things like that. You mentioned the hardwoods, and I'll brag on the hardwood industry. That's a $10.5 billion industry in our state. That takes it all the way up through when you think about cabinetry and the things that we might make out of hardwoods. It's about a $1.5 billion of lumber harvested in a year in Indiana.
My gosh.
So it's a huge industry. And the thing that's good about that, too, is that it is the best way to really manage a forest, and they're replacing three trees for every one. And, you know, it's definitely a very good story of sustainability, you know, and people get the wrong feeling about that. You say, well, we cut down $1.5 billion. Well, okay, but we're planting three times that much each year to manage those forests. So I've been extremely impressed with the hardwood industry and what they do. Again, they're a quiet industry. You know, you don't hear a lot about
it. I had no idea it was that much.
Right, and they keep their head down and they work. And it's both in northern and southern Indiana. We've got good places for that. So that's a great thing. But then you get into eggs and tomatoes and mint and soybeans and corn and we're in the top five of all those. You know, and so for a state our size, we really punch above our weight when it comes to the things that we produce.
Wow. Yeah, you don't even, we've had some egg producers on here before, and some of the things about just commercial production agriculture, and to be in the top five in eggs, and one of the things that kind of a novel, neat thing that came out was that whenever someone cooks the eggs or takes it out of the carton, that's the first time human hands has touched the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, right?
Yep.
So, but that is neat to see how. I know one of the things on Indiana State Department of Ag.gov, I believe, is where you can find some crop density maps, or maybe that's USDA.
It's probably USDA.
But you can find some crop density maps, and it lets you select, like you would never think mint,
right.
is an ag crop, right. But it lets you select and see where those things are grown.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that that group up there, you know, it's a very small number of farmers that actually raise mint, but it's a big deal to our state. And so we need, you know, I've got a goal to get there, and that's another spot I want to visit because I've never been on a mint farm. And, but we need to know how to best support that industry and what they need. And we'd sure love to expand that.
Yep. Well, Don, can you think of anything, any other topics that you'd like to talk about that we haven't touched on?
Yeah. Well, I could go on and on about agriculture as far as that goes. The last thing I would say, the Indiana Grown Program is part of our ISDA, and we had a showcase just 2 days ago down in Bloomington. And, you know, the idea that local produce is not just a fad. The idea of being able to buy local is a real thing, and it's strong, and it's getting stronger in our state. I'm really proud of what Indiana Grown has done. And then this showcase that we had was a chance for vendors that are Indiana Grown members to come together at the convention center in Bloomington. And then we had buyers come in, and basically it was a trade show, but people from schools, restaurants, hospitals, you know, more of the wholesale type buyers could come in and see who could I buy local products from and get the on a higher scale, mm-hmm. you know, than just a selling at a farmer's market or something like that. And it was a great success. Lots of people on both buyers and vendors. And so it's just really exciting to watch also, you know, we think about corn, we think about soybeans, we think about eggs, we think about duck, all the big ag stuff, but that local produce is becoming much, much bigger. And that feeds into a lot of things, topics about food deserts, topics about food insecurity.
Wow.
And how agriculture is important in those worlds. So just the idea that agriculture and our natural resources are the key to quality of life for everybody. That's the reality that I've come to know.
Truth is the truth.
The truth is the truth. And agriculture and our natural resources, taking care of our natural resources, is the key to quality of life for everybody. And so we've got a huge job to do, and it's sure fun to be a part of it.
Well, Ryan's been quiet through this whole talk, but we at Premier Ag, we definitely appreciate you coming down because we did start this podcast. Ryan had an idea and to start this and just to advocate for agriculture because we know there's a lot of people out there that aren't connected to ag. So it's not just people in our industry that are listening and watching this. And we appreciate you coming down and help advocate for agriculture and telling us about some of the things that you do and definitely some of the things with new markets and trade opportunities that you're working on. So, Mr. Lamb, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate what you're doing.
All right. That's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Please like and subscribe. Thank you very much.